Connor, Mackey, and Bernie are The Rookies. Three sports fans left unsupervised in the studios of Fox Sports Radio Charlotte, bringing you a whole, literally new sports talk show. The Rookies starts now.
Good morning, guys, and welcome to another Saturday with The Rookies. And I cannot be more pumped for today's show, guys. We're talking Hornets, we're talking NBA, we're talking Major League Baseball playoffs, and we have a very special guest at 10:40. But, guys?
Is it Ashton Kutcher?
It's not Ashton Kutcher. No, it's not. It's close, though.
I was kind of excited last night. Thought it was Ashton Kutcher.
It's close. Connor, all right,
boys,
what's up?
I got to open up here. I got to take the floor. Whoever gave all these Charlotte drivers their license needs to be put out of business. For real. Like, the driving in Charlotte is absolutely horrendous to begin with. Almost got hit twice on the way here. I had somebody come to a complete stop in front of me on 277 right off the exit. Who comes to a complete stop?
Every time I drive into the station, every single time, it's just dead stop on 277. They don't know how to merge. Here's my biggest complaint.
Let me hear it.
When you're on the on-ramp to an interstate or a major highway, you match the speed of traffic on the highway of which you're about to merge onto.
But I understand. Listen, I get what you're saying, right? But I'm talking on the weekend, and this thing was at a standstill. Like there was nobody in front of this guy. It was just him, and we weren't even near the exit.
Now, I will say
we were on the exit ramp, but we weren't near the exit himself, and it was nine.
I will defend people in Charlotte because there's a lot of people that aren't from Charlotte that are here in Charlotte. Like, I see a lot of Florida tags. I see a lot of South Carolina. South Carolina drivers, I'm calling you out right now. Worst drivers, maybe, in America.
No.
At least the Carolinas.
South Carolina, I'll back you up. No.
Maybe Florida. There's some northern states.
It's definitely.
Listen, it's just because I'm exposed to South Carolina drivers, I think.
True. I mean, like, living up in Boone, we have Florida drivers all summer and stuff. And Florida drivers are good on the interstate, but when it comes to, you know, city driving, like, inside of a, with all these intersections and stoplights, Florida drivers are awful. I'm sorry. I'll say it.
Hey, guys, you know, we're going to do something we've never done before. We're going to break for the top of the hour here right now.
WBCN Charlotte, WSOC FM HD3 Charlotte, WPEG FM HD2 Charlotte, WNKS HD2, W234BY Charlotte's Fox Sports Radio.
Wow, that was incredible.
If you've been listening to the show for the last couple of weeks, you understand that we always struggle trying to time up the top of the hour, and it always interrupts us, and it just sounds horrible. But today we were on our game, and we finally were able to run a professional open to a show. I'm very, very proud of us. That is called progress.
Is there anything that you could compare that to? The feeling? Maybe having a child.
Being in the city.
That's probably better than having a child.
With good drivers. That's what that could compare to.
I don't know. So working in promotions here at the Beasley Media Group in Charlotte, I drive a Hyundai Elantra. A lot of our promotions trucks are pretty big.
A little bit bigger.
Yeah, and so the first time I was driving, what was that event we went to, Connor? It was in the Chevy. That's a Silverado, right?
Nissan. Yeah, it was in a Silverado.
That's my first one with Connor, too.
I know, and I'm just sitting.
Because you're going to take people on your. This is our first date spot, huh? Is that what it is?
Gastonia Nissan?
Just another person.
Take them all to the same spot.
But driving those big trucks through Charlotte, I'm not going to lie, I was nervous. I did have a bad Charlotte driver moment to where I about missed my turn. I was sitting at a stoplight, and I didn't realize, like, this intersection was the one I was supposed to turn down. So the light finally turns green, and we start going. I'm like, oh, crap. And I quickly merge over into the left turn lane, and this big truck behind me honked. And I was like, you can honk at me.
It's my fault.
No, do you ever just drive?
I'm the jerk in this situation.
I definitely acknowledge when I have some bad moments on the road. I look at somebody, and I give them a wave. I'm like, that's me. You're right. You can honk. Just don't flip me off. It's not that serious.
Just don't flip me off. Yeah, you never know.
No free birds.
So there was a time when I was at work, and some guy followed a member, I don't want to say, a person off of the road into this club. And this guy was walking up, and he's like, hey, can you call the cops? And I thought he was joking. But then the guy in the van is like, hey, what's your problem? And, you know, curse words, obviously, I can't say on the radio. And I'm like, wow, this is really happening right in front of me. really didn't know what to do. And he's like, yeah, we're going to call the cops on you and get you removed from the premises. And he's like, you're swerving in and out of traffic, cutting people off. You know, what are you, just this rich, you know, so-and-so? And he's like, look, dude, we're calling the cops. And then this the ranger, the starter here, just starts walking up. And he's like, you need to leave. You need to leave. Like Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oof.
Like, you need to leave. And the guy takes off. He has a dog in the passenger seat, by the way. So not making matters better. The dog could attack.
Listen,
but it was a cute dog.
I'm a lot more defensive when I've got Sid in the truck with me.
It's like a little child.
If you hit me and I get hurt, fine.
But if you hurt my 20-pound beagle
and my 20-pound dog gets hurt, we're gonna have an issue, and it's gonna be a lot better.
I wish I knew wrestling moves,
than it is
moves
you.
like Q.
Right
we
now,
we could throw one out there.
True. I stopped watching WWE like in seventh grade, but right now, we're
the
rookies.
Is that shots fired?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's fake wrestling.
I haven't watched it forever.
I'll say it.
I called it acting
Q,
last
you heard
night.
It here. Debate him. Debate him on Monday. Says it's fake.
Well, this is the rookies right here on Fox Sports Radio Charlotte. We're currently talking about driving in Charlotte. And the last thing I want to say, I don't flip people off, and I don't like it when people flip me off, but I was driving with a friend to Ocean Isle Beach, sophomore year of high school. And he flipped off somebody that didn't use his blinker. And I was like, all right, dude, you kind of have anger issues, but that's fine. And this guy whipped an illegal U-turn in a very, very busy four-lane highway and cut us off and got out with a knife and just started charging our car.
No! God, please, no! 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 No!
And I'm very happy he was driving because it was a stick shift. I will say, I don't know how to drive a stick shift. But he booked it. And I'm like, dude, this is what happens when you just lose your temper and flip off a random person. You don't know what people are going through. You don't know how angry people are really inside. We about got stabbed because a guy didn't use his blinker. I was like, dude, stop doing that.
Hey, my buddy Josh just texted me and said that wrestling is not fake. It's predetermined.
That's fine.
The injuries are very real.
No, I agree. I was listening to the QCB show yesterday with Connor, and I think mainly I stopped watching WWE because it started getting a little less unique and a little more showtime, like Connor said.
Well, there's a plot line. There's a plot line. You got to follow it.
But like, I remember the John Cena
it's
days.
Showbiz, baby.
The Batista, Undertaker. I was having a great time with it.
All right, boys. Before we turn the table right here, what is the best thing you think North Carolina has to offer?
The best thing?
The best thing North Carolina, the state
itself,
has to offer.
That's a very broad question.
It is a very broad question,
beer.
But we're gonna break it right down to the sports after that.
All right. The best thing North Carolina has to offer, I think, geography.
Oh, wow. What a nerd.
I think, because think about it. This is one of the only
states
you have beautiful mountains, and then you come to my homeland in Rowan County, and you just have beautiful, beautiful fields of corn, and then you go 3 hours east, and then you have beautiful, beautiful beaches. You have Wilmington. You have the Outer Banks. North Carolina's perfect, man.
It's
when
great,
it comes to climate
it's
and all
a great
that
argument.
Stuff, that's what I'm saying.
I appreciate
geography.
That.
And I also took I had a test on it a couple of years
ago. I thought you were going to say geology, Mackie.
I'm glad I did say geology, too.
The rocks in North Carolina are beautiful.
What do you think is the best thing that North Carolina has to offer?
Oh, I don't know.
You just wanted to pose the question and not have an answer for us?
Yeah,
wow.
Actually.
He does this a lot.
What a guy.
He really does.
I know.
He'll put you on the spot, then when you ask him, to where you ask him a very valid retaliation question, just saying, hey, so what do you think about the same question you just asked me?
Yes.
He's like, I don't know.
That's not, my job to know.
As a New
Jerseyan.
I like
the breweries, and then one of the big things from being up north is the Bojangles. I like the Bojangles
down
Bojangles.
Here.
Give me.
So.
Yeah, let's go.
I'm going to hit it with a. Oh, sorry. You're not done yet.
No. Go.
I'm going to hit it with old Mackie. Mackie, I'd forgotten where you were from. I'm glad you said Rowan County.
Oh.
Salisbury, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to hit it with a little cheer wine.
Cheer wine, baby.
Love some cheer wine. And I know it's not for everybody, you know? Delicious cherry drink that's refreshing. Anytime you drink it, really doesn't matter. You could be hot. You could be cold. You could be in bed. You could be on a light rail. Uptown to curse out Michael Jordan for being so bad at dealing with the Hornets.
We're going to take this one step further. What do you think the best football team in North Carolina is?
And I think we all know what Mackie's answer is, but let me argue against.
I was going to say Methodist, but
hey, what do you want to do for the over under on Mackie choosing App State?
I think it's 100%. Maybe 120.
Do y'all want to hear my answer? You'll be surprised.
Yep.
It's the App State Mountaineers.
It's Elon.
Wow.
Lee's McCray, Western Carolina.
Y'all know I had to support my men up the mountain.
I understand.
I support my men in the city, but
in the city.
Hey, Mac. Mac, what's your argument? I mean, why are they the best team in North Carolina? And this is right now.
Yeah. I'm thinking right now. And so the argument I always hear is, who does App State play? And I don't like that. Because App State, you know, they're in the Sun Belt. It is known as a conference that it's a Group of Five conference, and it's known as a conference that doesn't have these monster teams. And I'm assuming that the other team that you're arguing is Wake Forest, correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and so right now, Wake Forest probably
you
has.
Knew that. I don't have to guess. I told you that.
I think Wake Forest has the edge on them because Wake Forest did beat App State. Fair and square, the last matchup they've had.
Yeah.
But App State, I know. But App State right now, ranked number 24.
Mm-hmm.
They are, Sun Belt teams have been ranked in the country three times. App State has held two of them.
That's a big deal.
This is the highest ranking a Sun Belt team has ever had. Right now, they are one of 12 unbeaten teams in the FBS, but they don't play anybody. No, this is still the FBS. Whoever App State has on the field, they have beaten so far this year. And then the other group of five teams that are unbeaten, Boise State and SMU, two great programs. SMU's having one of the best starts of their season. They're 6-0. They're ranked number 19th in the country. In terms of the nation, App State is on an 11-game win streak, and that's third longest behind Clemson and Ohio State. Ohio State has one more game on them in a row right now. So, I mean, right, I'm doing it in terms of their standing in the country and then converting that to how they are in the state, because they are also have 13 straight home wins, seventh longest at Dick Street. Since the start of 2015, they're number five in win percentage in the country behind Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. App State is in this category with a lot of these teams that are fighting for the college football playoff spots right now.
Ooh, that's pretty good. So here's my argument, Mac, and I know you say—
And real quick, sorry, Bernie, I just want to clarify that. I'm not saying that App State should get a college football spot.
I'm just saying that they're in the company.
Statistically, yes.
I get that. So here's my argument, all right? Wake Forest is in the ACC. Now, while the ACC is not a great conference, it is still a Power 5.
Definitely.
I think the big argument for people with App State is they do play Power 5 teams twice, maybe three times a year. Wake Forest has to play Power 5 teams consistently, 7-8 times a year in conference against some pretty tough competition. Now, aside from the loss that they had to Louisville, which was by 5 points, I believe, something like that,
62-59.
High-scoring game.
Definitely.
And Louisville is hot right now. Louisville's a really good team. We'll talk about that later. Wake Forest just, I feel like, has everything that you want right now. They have seniority out there.
Mm-hmm.
They have talent. Yeah. Their quarterback is playing crazy good. He's got 20 total touchdowns, three of them rushing and only five picks. It's Jamie Newman. And then Sage Surratt is lighting it up with only through six games. He's got 711 receiving yards and nine touchdowns through six games. And that's pretty insane. But look at the competition they've played. They've also played some really stiff competition. App State has played Carolina. Who else have they played?
In the conference, they played Louisiana, who's a Sun Belt foe, and I agree with you on that one. But App State joined the Sun Belt in 2014, newer conference at the time. They're 36-4 in 40 of their last conference games. They're 36-6 overall in Sun Belt play as a school. They rank 10 nationally right now with 41 points per game. And also, here's a huge one: they're tied with Oregon with fewest fumbles lost, and that's zero. And keep in mind, App State running backs have not fumbled the ball once in 23 games.
That's pretty impressive.
And then they are also the leader in the country. This is App State with the fewest amount of turnovers in the FBS. They have two total turnovers this season.
But how many spots do you think you can realistically climb in the AP poll just by beating teams like South Alabama, Louisiana Monroe, Georgia Southern? I think when you go to South Carolina, it's going to be a really tough game. Mm-hmm. I do think it'll be close, but I think South Carolina can hand you guys your first loss. In Williams-Brice, I think that's the big difference. It's away from home.
They can. And USC is a hard place to play. I mean, I think that App State can get up to the teens. If they keep winning and they go undefeated. Now, App State is one of those teams because of their conference, because of their competition, to where if they lose, they're more likely to get bumped out of the top 25, especially if they're holding these 20 through 24. And my argument to the whole competition, the whole schedule is that App State, I believe, is going to move out of the Sun Belt sometime soon, and relatively in the next 3 to 4 years. App State as a school also doesn't even have 20,000 students
yet. Maybe they go to the SEC.
Oh, no, I don't want that
to
happen.
Bama.
We want Bama. But I will say this. I'm so high on App State because out of all my teams that I really enjoy when it comes to NBA, college football, NFL.
That's the only one that wins.
Well, I was going to say App State is the only one that I can put against any opponent they're playing. And I can still have full faith that they can easily come out with a W.
I do think that they're a great team. App State is almost to that point where I feel like I'd put them up against any team in North Carolina. Especially right now, North Carolina is not very good. They're getting better. State is god-awful. I'm a State fan. You know, and that's pretty much all we have. Duke is decent.
If you heard Mackey before, Mackey said that he's going to give the edge to Wake Forest, but he's still choosing App State. I don't know if you heard that during his rant before or not.
I did not.
But you were like, they beat us last time, so I'm going to give them the edge here.
Yeah, at this moment right now in this six games into the season.
So you're saying that Wake Forest is a better football team than App State?
I'm right saying now. In terms of the last matchup. Mm. I did say that.
Mackie, you talked yourself into it.
Talked himself something. Right into what I wanted. That's what I wanted to hear.
They beat us in 2017, so as of right now.
Mackie said Wake Forest is better.
All right.
All the
got
upstate
me.
Alumni out there.
I also say Wake Forest is better. I think Wake Forest has had a harder schedule. I mean, you can't put that against anything. I understand that. Like, App State doesn't pick who they want to play, just like Wake That's Forest true. Doesn't pick who they want to play.
And when they do pick who they want to play, they generally pick top talent. They pick bigger schools.
It's not like App State completely just exiles himself from actual competition.
No, I'm not saying that at all, but I'm just saying with what's happened, you know, so far, they didn't lose to Louisville by that much, and then they beat Boston College. They beat the Tar Heels, which App State also did. Almost doubled the score when they played Rice. Scored 7 times the amount of points that Elon did when they played Elon, and then they beat Utah State by a field goal. And then they're playing FSU tonight. They're playing Florida State.
That'll be a good measuring stick.
The Seminoles, yep.
And when it comes to the competition and stuff, if you're in the ACC, that's a whole different class of recruiting as well, no matter what sport you're in, because the ACC is a much bigger conference than the Sun Belt.
We'll really find out what Wake Forest is capable of in the next next 6 weeks, actually.
Yeah, because it's mainly ACC games, isn't it?
Right. Starting today, they're playing Florida State. Next week, they're playing NC State. And then it's Virginia Tech, Clemson, Duke, and then they finish out in Syracuse.
I could genuinely see them only losing to Clemson in those games. I could. I could see them beating Florida State.
I absolutely could. But I'm saying we're really going to see what Wake Forest is made of in these last 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, and Mackie, I just want to throw this out there. If we're talking about past, Wake Forest in 2017 did beat Texas A&M in a bowl game. That's an SEC school.
Mm-hmm. That was a great game.
That's just facts.
Wake Forest put up a lot of points, I believe, too, didn't they?
Just the facts.
They put up like 40 points.
I think it was 50 something.
Oh, dang, yeah, I know
it
that
was a lot.
And that's and right now App State they joined the Sun Belt, which was FBS in 2014, and they're 4-0 in bowl games right now.
Yeah.
So and that's my whole measuring stick as well. You can't compare the schedules of two teams. You can compare how, and that's what I said. The last matchup, Wake Forest did beat App State off a blocked field goal in 2017, but it was a hard fought game. Great atmosphere, by the way, because you know Wake Forest is only an hour and a half down the road, down I-40,
and but, similar colors.
Exactly. But when when App State comes up, they're an efficient team. They win. They've had arguably the best transition from FCS to FBS football, and I'm happy right now that App State is starting to play more teams in North Carolina. They're starting to play more Power 5 conferences instead of just that one game at the beginning to where it was like Michigan, Tennessee, Georgia, et cetera. Now it's multiple games a year to where they're playing Power 5 schools.
Well, what notable games do you think App State has left? I would mark down USC, obviously, and I would also mark down Georgia Southern, but is there anybody else
I don't have the schedule in front of me. Georgia Southern.
It's L.A. Monroe, and then
ULM.
It's Southern Alabama, Georgia Southern, USC, Georgia State.
Georgia State beat Tennessee this year, first game of the week. They upset Tennessee.
Texas State, and then Troy. But
I would say I know we got to move on. I would say Troy, Georgia Southern, USC, and then Georgia State. Not saying all of those are crazy games, but those are four notable opponents who have proven to win as Group of Five Sun Belt schools.
Yeah, well, hey, guys, sticking in the college football realm, I want one game that you really want to watch, and you think that there could be an upset or just a really interesting game out there.
Temple and SMU.
Okay, why is that?
It's just going to be a good game.
I like that. That sounds like an explanation I went ahead. It's 6-0 team versus 5-1, right?
Yeah, it's 6-0 and 5-1, and I believe that SMU is home. SMU is home against Temple. Temple's been knocking on the door all season, and if they can come out and beat SMU here, that would be huge for the team. Right now, SMU has -9, so they're factored to win by more than 10 points.
You think SMU gets a win and covers the spread?
I would say SMU gets the win. I don't necessarily know that they cover the spread. I would say SMU by 7.
Okay. Mackie, what you got?
I got Florida, USC. Gamecocks are coming off a big upset over number 3 Georgia last week. It's a game against a top 10 Florida team. Florida has a great defense, and I'm just trying to see if the Gamecocks can ride this momentum from that big upset and see if they can get another upset over another ranked team.
You got a prediction?
I think Florida will come out, but I do want USC to win because for the sake of the argument, as an App State fan, I want USC to be as good as they can going
that.
In because if they beat us, I want to get beaten by a great USC team and then vice versa.
Because the Carolina win looks a little less good now as they've lost a few games here.
Exactly.
The game I'm looking at is Clemson at Louisville. Absolutely. And I think this is a scary game for Clemson. I know they're favored by 24.5.
Really?
I think that's ridiculous.
They're favored by 24 against Louisville?
That's what I read.
That's, oh my gosh.
Which is ridiculous.
I agree with
Louisville's
at
home, so I think Louisville will at the very least cover the spread. At the very least.
24.5 and they're at home? That's disrespectful.
It is disrespectful.
They have Coach Satterfield. That's an offensive coach.
They are rolling. So I think Louisville may hang with Clemson for a while. They could upset him, but I think they're going to hang, but I think Louisville at least covers the spread.
I got one more that I find interesting.
Okay, what you got?
The Duke Blue Devils are going to play University of Virginia, so they're going to play the Cavaliers. I think that Duke obviously is the better team. They're averaging more points right now. But coming up after the break, we're going to continue talking about some college football. Then we're going to get right into the Hornets, Zion, East and West Conference, and we have a special interview coming up on the third segment. Stick around.
Go get them, boys. The Rookies are back on Fox Sports Radio Charlotte.
Guys, welcome back to The Rookies. We are talking Hornets. We just talked a little college football. And we're going to talk a little bit of baseball later. But, Connor, I think you wanted to say a few things.
Well, I think it's obvious with how the Charlotte Hornets are going to perform this season, right? With losing Kemba Walker and not bringing in any superior talents in the league itself. But I was wondering, did you boys catch any of the preseason games this year? And if you did, who's your man to watch?
I did catch one. It was the loss against the Celtics, and it was another heartbreaker for me as a Hornets fan because Hornets lost by one, something you're used to with the Hornets losing to close games late in the games. But I think right now we got to talk about the rookie that was drafted. I believe it was pick 16?
Who's widely unpopular draft pick, let's just say that.
Yeah, when he was drafted, and this is P.J. Washington, I was just kind of like, okay, another forward, another guy who can play the four. But he's been playing fairly well. I think this is good because watching him during the preseason, I've been worried about who can replace Jeremy Lamb's production. Everybody's like, Kemba. Kemba's gone. Who's going to replace Kemba? The Hornets have already found their replacement for him, Terry Rozier. Whether you like it or not, now you have to if you're a Hornets fan, put your faith in the Terry Rozier and hope that he can come out, lead the Hornets to a few dubs, put up some points, and be the leader on the court he's meant to be in Charlotte. Now I'm worried about Jeremy Lamb, who produced 15 points a game, 5 rebounds a game last season. He was a great counterpart to Kemba Walker, hit that amazing hit. He was the killer of Toronto Raptors, hitting buzzer beaters right last season.
He sure did.
And P.J. Washington right now, through the preseason, small sample size, and yes, it is preseason, looks like he could be the leading contender to replace Jeremy Lamb's production. Over the 5 preseason games, P.J. Washington averaged 25 minutes per game. Another shout-out to head coach Borrego. He gives the young guys minutes on the floor, no matter if you're known as the starter on a team.
In all fairness, Nick Batum is out with an Achilles injury.
Yeah, and that's
so otherwise, he would be playing 30 minutes a game, giving us 7 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists and 15 turnovers.
Exactly. He averaged 12.2 in the preseason.
Ooh.
Points per game.
And Terry Rozier actually wanted to mention average 15.3.
Half a point per $1 million he's making. That's pretty good. I like that.
And, you know, he started. P.J. Washington started the last three preseason games. He averaged 12 points a game, 50% from three, 63% from the field.
Like that.
And he, like I said, it was another forward that the Hornets drafted. The Hornets are a pretty tall and lean team. Washington is 6'8". I'm looking for him to replace Marvin Williams, replace Nick Batum at the four throughout the season. And I don't know. I'm really excited to watch these young players play. And so far, P.J. Washington did what he needed to do in the preseason, which is the time he needed to do it in, to say, hey, I think I could be a starter on the Charlotte Hornets team, who around the league could be viewed as a team that's tanking.
Well, so my thoughts on the preseason is we need to cut down on the turnovers. Q said it on his show, 22, 22, 19, and 25. Respectively, those are the turnovers that we had in our four preseason games. Not good. And that was an issue last year. When you're not a great team, you can't make mistakes like that and hope to win games. I had the Hornets winning close to 27 games, but that's going to be tough. The preseason did make me feel a little more optimistic. We got a lot of young talent that needs to grow together. And speaking of young talent, do you guys have one player in particular that you want to see take a step forward?
I really want to see Miles Bridges, of course. He's probably my favorite player on the team right now. He's physical. He's athletic. He has the most playing time out of a lot of the younger guys. And I have a couple more, but I'm sure y'all are going to agree with me with the other two I have picked out. But Miles Bridges, I think if Miles can, you know, somewhat get a jump shot, he's pretty ferocious in the paint. He was in the slam dunk contest as a rookie. He gets airborne. He's a very physical threat down low. I would like to see him more on defense, because I think that's where the Hornets are going to have to make up for the lost production and the loss of skill level that they lost this past offseason. And you mentioned turnovers. One thing that I don't like seeing are the Hornets giving up so many points in the first quarter. In the three losses, they gave up 29, 31, and 33 points in the first quarter. You can't let teams get out on a huge run to start the game off, which sometimes that's how the Hornets are. Hornets, I feel like, either just do horrible, and by the end of the first quarter, it's like 34 to 16, or they stick with them good, and then the other team begins to chip away at their lead as the game goes on, and then they lose close games in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, fourth quarter, I feel like their offense goes stagnant. It's not good. Connor, who you got?
I have the second year, or this is going to be his third year, shooting guard out of Kentucky. I'm picking Malik Monk. Monk averaged 8.9 points per game last season. Before that, he averaged 6.7. So,
ooh, big leap.
Yeah.
Huge leap.
Seriously.
God, he's
it's a big leap.
Improving.
And I'm really expecting something out of him this season. He should play more minutes, and I think he's going to score a ton more points. I think he's going to be a breakout player for the Charlotte Hornets this year.
Okay.
I disagree with that one.
Well, he added 20 pounds of muscle, Mackie, so you can't disagree.
I mean, I don't know. I think he has the most to prove out of any team. I'm a fan of Malik Monk, but he's been kind of underwhelming in his time in Charlotte. He was supposed to be that guy to come in with Kemba Walker. He's supposed to be Kemba's number two guy.
It's a different team this year.
I know, but he's been on the team 2 years, and you know he hasn't really shown 6.78 first round draft pick. It should brought in to be
11th overall too.
Yeah,
by the way.
That's what I'm saying. Brought in, he's a lottery pick.
Could
brought
have been
in
Mitchell.
To be the counterpart
should've
to Kemba Walker, and he hasn't really done much. He plays a little frantic. It looks like late in the game he'll just throw up a hook shot, or I don't know,
and
he'll
make it.
Yeah.
I will admit, his defense has gotten a little better since he came in the league. It was god-awful when he came in. His wingspan, I mean, you can't blame him. He does not have a long wingspan for a two guard.
No, the kid's only 6'3".
Yeah, but I've seen 6'3" guards that have, I mean, Donovan Mitchell's what, 6'4" maybe?
Yeah, we can talk about wingspan in the NBA, because these guys are huge.
Right, wingspan comes in huge when you're a 3-and-D guy. Malik Monk's not that guy. We drafted him to be a scorer, and he has not done that. That's if he doesn't get any...
So
and
make
rebounds,
up for some
I'm
other
okay
way.
With that. I just want him to shoot the ball.
Listen, Kemba's gone. They're going to need points from other players right now. You know, Terry Rozier, I'm sorry, isn't going to carry Charlotte itself. He's not going to carry that whole team. They're going to get a lot of production from a lot of different places this year. And if it's time for anybody to step up, you know, Monk's going to step up to the plate this season.
Well, you talked about Terry Rozier, and that's my guy to watch. I think, obviously, with the amount of minutes that he's going to get, his stats are going to improve. I want to see how much. I want to see if his shooting percentage gets better, because sub 40% in all of your NBA seasons is not going to cut it. here when we need to replace, what was it, 24 and a half, 25 points a game? Mm-hmm. Kemba Walker, 15 points from Jeremy Lamb.
That's what I'm saying. It's around 40 points a game at the, right. those two players alone.
So it's got to come with Terry Rozier. I don't think he's going to average 20 points a game. I think Terry's going to average around 19 to 18 points a game, maybe 7 rebounds, and hopefully 6 assists. I think that'll be enough if we get some help from the other pieces that we have. We have a lot of young talent that we need to grow together, like I said earlier. That's what pretty much our whole season relies upon.
And you mentioned how you need multiple players to make up for that production with Kemba, with Jeremy being gone. That's what I'm struggling with, Connor. I'm struggling with these players all of a sudden, now that their best player, a player who they rallied around, who led them to the playoffs in 2015, who has fought his whole career to get Charlotte on the map in the NBA, is now gone. So, for me, I don't expect those players who didn't really show up when they had that player in Charlotte to show up with him gone now. I don't think that Malik Monk will rally around Terry Rozier the way he could have rallied around Kemba. I have faith in Terry Rozier, but if Malik Monk hasn't really showed me much with Kemba or with the star power and with the atmosphere that the Charlotte Hornets fan base brought, I don't see that changing to where he can be a significant producer for the Charlotte Hornets for 82 games and try to make them a contender when everybody is already trying to count him out.
Well, it was clear Kemba is the best player in Charlotte last season, right?
Yeah, that's definitely.
And for the last years, actually. I mean, it's a lot of trying to force the ball to Kemba. And you know what? Malik Monk and all these other players aren't going to be able to force that ball to Kemba Walker, right? They're going to have to get open. They're going to have to drive to the net. And they're going to have to get their own shots off. And I'm not saying that you're going to see Malik Monk go from 8.9 points per game to 15 mm-hmm. to 12. But if he makes another jump towards 10.5, if he can average 10.5 points per game, you know, he's jumping up almost four points per game from his rookie year, right? His field goal percentage went up 27 points between 17 and 18. He's making more baskets and he's getting more opportunities. And right now, without Kemba Walker being in Charlotte, a lot of these players are going to have to take more shots.
Yeah, and that's a double-edged sword. It could either go up or it can just and go all the way down.
I understand.
But that's with everything with sports. And I guess with me, this may be selfish from my point of view. I guess what I'm struggling with is just why can't I expect the 11th overall pick a couple years ago to average 15 points? Why shouldn't
I think he will, as a
Hornets fan, be able to say, yeah, maybe he's, and I'm agreeing with you, Connor, saying, yeah, he may not go from 8 points a game to 15, but 10.5, 11. It's like, no, as an 11th overall pick in the first round, you should be expected to be in the double digits.
I agree.
And that's what's frustrating is the Hornets just don't put talent on the team. They really don't. We're paying five guys, $340 million. Terry Rozier, Nick Batum, Marvin Williams, Cody Zeller, MKG. Bismack Biyombo is like making $17 million a year.
Yeah.
To where I'm not saying they're horrible. They are not. I like watching Biyombo play. I like watching Williams play.
They're definitely not worth the money.
And that's what I'm saying. And it's just it's hard for me to grasp that. How Malik Monk, I should expect him, and I want him to prove me wrong. I want him to be like, Mackey, shut up. I'm going to go off. And I want to see him go off. But in the last 2 years, he hasn't really shown me that much. He's in his third year. He's now without Kemba Walker. So technically, he could be viewed as one of the offensive stars on this Hornets team. So he's going to have to start playing as like an offensive star because they need it. The Hornets don't have room to mess up if they want any hope at a playoff team, to where I'm not counting him out as much as other people are. I'm really not. I think they're going to do relatively just a little worse than they did last year.
Okay.
So like 30 games.
I have them specifically at 33, but I think they could be anywhere around 35. They won 39 last year. I don't think this Hornets team, someone said, yeah, they're going to win 14. I think Brandon said it yesterday on the show. He said he's going to win 14.
Bino said 40. I think that's a little steep. Connor, what's your record prediction?
Honestly, I think between 27 and 30 is going to be a fair
I have them at least 30. I think the Hornets can pull off 30 wins with this roster.
I'm at 25 to 27. Is there one player you guys think is going to be the MVP for this team? Not for the league, obviously. We don't have anybody like that.
For the team, this is one I really hope he stays healthy. Cody Zeller. I think he's now going to be the veteran. I think he's now going to be one of the veterans on the Hornets, which he already is. He sets the tone on the floor. He's one of those bigs that you can see statistically that the team plays better when he's on the floor. He's great at setting up his smaller guys with picks, and he's a great leader. He's vocalized, and he's a hustler. No matter what Cody Zeller does, where he goes, I will always appreciate his time in Charlotte because he puts his body on the line for the 50-50 balls in the middle of the second quarter.
He's tall, too. He's very tall.
He's 7 foot.
He's very tall.
He's one of the only presence Charlotte has had in down low in a couple of years.
It's true. Connor, who you got?
Honestly, I was also going to go Cody Zeller, so I'm trying to figure out in my head who I want to go. Yeah, you go
ahead. I'll go Miles Bridges. I think Miles Bridges is going to go off this year. I think he's going to have a crazy good year. I think he's going to shoot over 36% from three, which is pretty good. And I think he's going to shoot 65% from the floor, average maybe 17 points a game. I think Miles Bridges is that hybrid player that we expected him to be. He's going to be that guy this year. He's an absolute monster athletically. I'm just really excited to see what he's going to do this year with all these young guys. They're all hungry. And I think we felt that in the press conference.
That's a good way to put this team.
They're all very hungry.
They know what the expectations are.
And teams will take nights off against the Hornets, I think. So our schedule is not very favorable the first 10 games. But one of the teams we will face are the Pelicans. And unfortunately, we're not going to get to see their star player, Zion Williamson.
Dang it. I'm a big
Spartanburg
fan.
Spartanburg native. Really stinks because I was really looking forward to see him.
Born in Salisbury. I just found that out a couple months ago.
Born in Mackey's native town of Salisbury.
Hey, do you got to appreciate where you come from?
That's
put him
right.
on the map.
Mackberry.
Right. So,
we'll call him Mackberry.
He is injured. He got a knee injury. Do you guys think it has to do with weight?
I'm not even going to entertain that.
I'm 6 foot, 220 pounds, and both my knees work just fine.
My feet hurt a little bit.
First off, he's also 285.
He's also 6'7".
I think, since they made this new NBA rule, you have to measure without shoes on, I guess.
Yeah, something like that.
And but people's heights have gone way down.
But I want to preface this by saying, no matter what I say on this show when it comes to talent or my takes on sports, I understand that the people I'm talking about are 100% better and more athletic than I am. But also, I don't feel like I have a right to mention any athlete's weight. Just by the way I look. But I don't think weight's an issue, period, for Zion. And I don't think people should make it an issue. It's his first season in the NBA. He's big. He's a dominant player. I mean, it's not like he's coming in and he's jiggling. It's not like he can't get up anymore. That's what people were stressing out about when he was doing all of these award ceremonies and these tours over after the college football season over the summer, gaining some weight. People were like, oh, can he still get up? He scored 29 points that one game. Granted, they were all right there at the basket, but he's still dunking on opponents. I don't think weight's an issue. And if it is, it's going to get fixed. This is his rookie season in the NBA. Give him one full year in the NBA and then give him an offseason, and I promise whatever doubt you have about his weight is going to be fixed. Look at Christian McCaffrey. He came in, he's a big guy, but he came in relatively small. And then after that first season, when he posted one of his pictures right before the 2018 season, Christian McCaffrey was jacked. Give him a full year and then give him a full offseason to work with his training staff, work with strength and conditioning. And I promise this isn't even going to be a conversation anymore.
I think it's just because he's so good.
The amount of games that they play, too, they play a lot more games in the NBA. So this kid's going to be getting a lot more work in, and he's going to be working out a ton more. So
exactly.
I wouldn't even worry about it, to be honest with you.
This is a job now. This is no longer something you do at school.
The kid's getting stronger. Right, exactly. And,
he's just too explosive.
If I may... Maybe his knee wouldn't hurt if he was fat. You know, if he was fat, he would have had a little bit more cushion around that knee.
If he was fat, he wouldn't have to play in the NBA, and his knees wouldn't hurt every game.
Is this the knee injury stemming from that Duke Carolina shoe fiasco? Is this the same knee?
Potentially.
Because I know he banged it up.
I'm not sure which knee it is.
I don't know if it is the same knee.
But going back to the shoe thing, he's just so explosive. For a kid that size, for a kid that weight, I think B-Notes brought it up yesterday. I wouldn't hate to see him lose 15 pounds. I think that would be really good for him. He might even just be faster, harder to guard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think they're expecting him to bang with fives and maybe fours and threes. But Zion is not going to go down there and mess with Anthony Davis. He's not going to go down there and mess with Boogie Cousins, Karl-Anthony Towns. He's not that guy. And I think it's ridiculous for people to say that he needs to keep 284 on. I think he could easily lose 15 pounds, still be a dominant player, if not more so.
I think he definitely can. I don't think that it's an issue, though. I don't think that 284, 285 is an issue for him right now. I think he'll be just fine. Whatever struggles he has will just be common rookie struggles, and as the season goes on, he'll get in better shape. You just got to give it time. He's not even played his first NBA regular season game.
He just used our show name.
Rookies. All right, guys. We're going to be right back with a very special guest. And we're going to talk some MLB playoffs, a little bit of NBA. Don't go anywhere.
Back to the rookies who are still here on Fox Sports Radio Charlotte.
Guys, welcome back to the rookies. It's Bernie here with Mackie. Connor's going to stay for a few more minutes before he heads out. But we're here on Fox Sports Charlotte, 94.7 FM, 1660 AM. You can listen to us online or just download the app for iPhone and Android. We've got a very special guest on right now, Mr. Justin Kutcher. He is a Fox Sports analyst, also play-by-play man for the Washington Wizards. Welcome, Justin. You there? Justin, right. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Ooh, had a little technical difficulties there. How you doing, Justin?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Thanks for coming on, man. Really appreciate it. Great to see talk to you again. So we got a major Yankees fan on here right now, and he just wants to say a few things to you.
All right, Justin, did you watch that game last night, brother?
I did, of course.
How electric was that stadium last night after Aaron Hicks lifted that ball into the right field seats? I mean, that place went nuts right after Aaron Hicks hit that ball.
They needed it. I mean, I was watching it. I was actually in a production meeting. My producer was trying to go over our open, and he hit the home run, and I clapped my hands. And they needed to take advantage of that opportunity, and that's all it came down to. I think it was great. Obviously, they win the game. You move on to a game six, you live to play another game. It was so important to get a guy like Verlander early because he's one of those guys, you let him settle down and you're done. And that's what happened. He settled in. I think he retired 21 batters he faced. It was a win, but I know it's going to sound weird that I'm a pessimist, but it was also a loss because with game six being a bullpen day, he got a chance to rest Houston's bullpen. And what you were hoping to do is you got him on the ropes, keep him on the ropes, knock him out, and drain that bullpen for game six. With that said, Yankees got to take one more and see what they can do against Gerrit Cole. But for me, what I love the most, honestly, was beyond Hicks hitting a three-run home run, I love seeing Aaron Boone leave James Paxton in to get through six innings. He knew today was going to be a bullpen day. Paxton went out through, 115 pitches or so. And that, to me, was a great sign because the way baseball is changing, I don't think it's for the better. You got to get length out of your starters, and they got length out of their starter last night.
I think that it's going to be Chad Green starting for the Yankees in Game 6. I know it's going to be a bullpen game, but usually when they go with an opener, they do choose Chad Green. Do you think they'll let him go more than two if he's dealing?
Yeah, I think they have to. It's one of those things where you can't go by the numbers anymore. You got to go by the feel and what's going on in the game. So Chad Green starts and he gets through two innings and he's pitching well. You ride him until you see him struggle. And then I think you're going to go Jay Happ after that. And you take him and you hope he gives you some length. One thing that Aaron Boone has not done all year is use a relief pitcher in three consecutive days. And if you think about it, they used Britton last night. They used Chapman last night. Those are your two most dependable arms in the bullpen. So if you can get through tonight without using one of those two guys and get a win, you're in good shape. On the other hand, all those guys would say, hey, I don't care. Use me 3 days in a row. We got to get to the World Series.
Justin, if you get past Gerrit Cole, do you feel better about facing Greinke? Is that somebody you feel like you guys can get to?
Well, Gerrit Cole, I think, is going to be in there for the long haul if they get to a game seven. Greinke coming out of the bullpen, I don't know how I feel about that. It's not one that overly would concern me as a if I'm, you know, rooting for the Yankees. I think the issue is, can you get to Cole? But the bigger issue is, can Severino step up and give you 6 to 7 innings in a game 7 if you get there? I think there's a lot of talk about, would the Astros start Gerrit Cole on short rest in game 6? And I applaud A.J. Hinch for not starting him on short rest. In the last 10 to 15 years, there's only been one starter, one ace, who would go on short rest and really deal in the postseason. And that was C.C. Sabathia back with the Yankees in 09. Beyond that, I think they learned their lesson from Verlander in the division series. And they said, you know what, we're going to take our chances with arguably the best pitcher in baseball right now on normal rest in game 7, as opposed to going short rest in game 6 and then seeing what happens in game 7.
Hey, Mr. Kutcher, this is Mackie Gallagher. It's a pleasure to meet you. I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
My pleasure, man.
I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to go to the NL. I'm a Nationals fan. I became a Nationals fan when I visited D.C. after I graduated high school, fell in love with the ballpark, fell in love with the atmosphere and fans. You're in D.C., I'm assuming, because you're the play-by-play guy for the Washington Wizards. How has the vibe and atmosphere of the nation's capital been with the Nationals finally reaching their first ever World Series in franchise history?
It's been awesome. My timing has been pretty good. The Washington Mystics just won the WNBA championship, and now you got the Nationals in the World Series. You know, it's funny. I thought that coming into the playoffs, everyone said, could the Dodgers be beat? And I thought there were two teams in the NL who could take down the Dodgers, the Nationals and the Mets, had they made it because of their starting pitching. I was really happy to see the Nationals make it. This is a good team. They're a feisty team. The energy around the city is unbelievable. But one of the coolest aspects that I've noticed, to be honest with you, is the support that all the professional teams give each other.
I have noticed that too.
Maybe the Redskins. The Redskins are off on their own, like, kind of island.
It's tough times for them.
But it is really cool. I mean, last night Scherzer was supposed to drop the puck at the Caps game, and he dropped the ball instead. And Scherzer and Zimmerman support the Caps. The Caps support the Nats. The Wizards, they were going to the Mystics games. The Mystics, they come to, you know, Wizards games. It's just really neat to see. It's neat to see that camaraderie among professional athletes who are around the same age, who respect what each other does. And for the Nats, man, it reminds me a lot, to be honest, of the 04 Boston Red Sox team. And that team had to get by the Yankees in order to kind of break the curse. And once they got by the Yankees in game 7, they went out and they swept St. Louis in the World Series. I felt like once the Nationals got the monkey off their back and won that first series, and the way they won that first series against the Dodgers, you know, they went and just plowed through St. Louis. The long layoff may affect them, but this is a team that's pretty special.
And I agree with you on the whole camaraderie. I think it's great because, you know, staying in Charlotte, this is a city to where a lot of people have moved here. A lot of people haven't been growing up in Charlotte. And now, especially with the Carolina Panthers, you're starting to see generational fans come up to where kids of parents who have been fans since the team started in 95 are now lifelong Panther fans. But, you know, with the Hornets, with the Panthers, you don't see a lot of people in Charlotte that are just Charlotte fans. So I do like that about D.C., and I did notice that in 2015 when I visited D.C. I do have one more question about the Nats. Do you think, no matter who they face, the Yankees or Astros, the Nationals have a chance to win? I think they can with this pitching rotation, but I would like to hear your point of view on this.
I think they have a chance to win, of course, just because the rotation is so good. You know, it's funny. I was talking with somebody yesterday, and I said, had the Astros won last night, you could have lined it up where you would have Scherzer versus Verlander, Strasburg versus Cole, Corbin versus Greinke. And I don't know if I can recall in my lifetime three better pitching matchups for a World Series. I mean, the first two games, you could make the argument that all four of those guys could have been the All-Star Game starter. And so that would be a really dynamic piece. the element to me that comes into play is twofold. One, that I believe the Nats and the Astros are similar. Great starting pitching. Bullpen is a little bit suspect. The Yankees, the starting pitching is not quite there. The bullpen is a strength. Yeah, I think whatever the matchup is, I think the Nats certainly have a really, really good opportunity playing at home. I mean, they've been unbelievable.
I'm very excited to watch this team. Thank you. I really appreciated your viewpoints.
Hey, Justin, do you feel like the time off the Nats are going to have is going to hurt them, or it's going to be helpful for them for the pitching staff to get healthy?
I think early on it hurts. It's just one of those things. Baseball players are accustomed to being on a routine, to pitching every 4 or 5 days. The bullpen guys are used to pitching every other day. So I think it's just one of those situations where, hey, look, you want to win as quickly as you can and get in and deal with everything after that. And that's what they did. But ultimately, I think the first two games, you could see some rust. And you just got to hope that, you know, somebody can keep you in it. Because you're going to be playing on the road. You're going to be either in Houston or New York. And if you can get one game and you know, get the blood flowing again and feel good, then all of a sudden, you know, you get back to D.C. and it's going to be a raucous environment.
Yeah, we're talking to Justin Kutcher here. He's the Fox Sports analyst and the Wizards play-by-play man. Justin, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the Wizards and what your expectations are for them going forward this year. Bradley Beal just signed a big max extension to stay there. Do you feel like that was a good move for him and the team? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I love it. Being around the team really since the beginning of September, there's a camaraderie there. It's a very young team. It reminds me almost of like a college type environment. There are 8 guys who came into camp 22 years or younger. So Beal being there, signing that 2-year extension, he's got security. It shows he wants to be in DC. And to me, anything they do this year, they're playing with house money. If they win, great. If they lose, you get a higher draft pick, and you go from there. And next year, you get John Wall back, so you combine Wall and Beal in the backcourt. I think Rui Hachimura is going to be the sleeper pick of this year's draft. He's going to be a stud. I'm going to say it right now. He'll be a multi-time All-Star. I know people think I'm crazy, but I'm putting it out there right here and now. I think he is a truly phenomenal player, and beyond that, he's going to have a huge impact. He's going to be the Ichiro of basketball for Japan.
That's a hot take, Justin.
Well, I'm telling you right now, like, just the media coverage of him, every question is about him. Japanese media, they sent tons and tons over to D.C. to follow Rui. They go crazy for him in Japan, and he hasn't even played his first NBA game yet. And he's a great, great kid. I think the over-under on the team wins is like 28. To be honest, I would take the over. I think this will be a team that's going to be in a lot of games. They may not win all the games, but they're going to show a lot of fight. And it's a great group to be around. They're good dudes. It's fun. The organization, honestly, I fell into something great. I didn't realize how lucky I was with top down, with the ownership, with the management, coaching staff, and the players, and obviously the people I work with at NBC Sports Washington. It's going to be a fun year, and we get going this week. I mean, we open up in Dallas on Wednesday and then go to OKC, back down to San Antonio, and then we head home for the opener against Houston. So right out of the gate, we come flying, and it's going to be fun.
Now, Justin, I have one more question. It's Mackie again. I did some play-by-play at App. I did play-by-play for Arena Football. I love play-by-play. I hope I'm able to find myself in that position again. But a little birdie, or I should say a little Bernie, has told me that you were in the booth. You were doing play-by-play for Pat McAfee's very first game as a broadcaster.
McAfee. It's McAfee.
McAfee, I'm sorry. McAfee, for his very first game as a broadcaster. Is that true? And if so, can you please tell me what he's like in the broadcast booth?
Okay, so it's partially true.
Okay.
It wasn't his first broadcast. It was his first NFL broadcast.
Right.
He called one college football game earlier. But McAfee, honestly, what you see is what you get. It's not an act. And we had a ton of fun. It was a 30-0 game. Lions won in Green Bay last December. And what I said to him is that, you know, anybody can call a close game. Like, those are easy to call. The crowd gets you into it. You're following. A 30-0 game, that's where we make our money. If we can keep the people tuned in and entertained. And we did a 30-0 game, and it felt like it flew by because we were laughing the whole time. We had a great time. He's got stories to tell nonstop throughout dinner and just all the time. He calls. We were in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and he saw, you know, curling, and he called up the place and he wanted to go see if he can go try out curling. And they're like, "Well, we're all booked until next week." He's like, "Ah, darn, that's not going to work." I mean, that's just him. You know, he would literally show up to coaches' meetings in like cut off shirts, and he had to keep his jacket on for the entire meeting with Matt Patricia because he only had a cut off hoodie on. So McAfee is classic. Fans love him. I truly enjoyed working with him, and I hope he has tremendous success calling games because he's a fun dude to be around.
Could you see him in the Monday night booth eventually?
I don't think Monday night. I don't see that. I know there was that push for it. Right. I don't see him going there. But I think where they have him right now, they just got to work out some kinks. But all three of those guys, Matt Hasselbeck, awesome dude, Adam Amin, another great guy.
Yeah, they sound great on college football.
So I think they're going to ride that out, see what it's going on, and then, you know, kind of go from there.
Gotcha. Well, Justin, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Justin Kutcher, Fox, used to be Fox Sports analyst. Now he works for NBC Washington as a Washington Wizards play-by-play man. Justin, thanks so much.
Hey, my pleasure, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate
it.
All right. So, guys, we're going to end our show like we do every week, and that is Rookie Mistake. Mac, you don't have anything this week, do you?
No, I come prepared. I have a rookie mistake, Bernie. I have one, and it is on the Kansas City Chiefs. Are you okay? What are you doing with the phone?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm okay. Go ahead.
And I just hear a lot of noise. The Kansas City Chiefs, how are you going to do a QB sneak with your quarterback with a bum ankle?
How are you going to do it?
I had that argument with Cam Newton in the Tampa Bay game, and then once I found out his foot was the way it was, I was like, okay, good job. Don't do it. But you have your star quarterback, probably the best quarterback in the league, out for a couple weeks right now.
Chiefs rookie mistake. All right, my rookie mistake is LeBron James. Come on, LeBron. Come on. Everybody knows what's going on in China right now, and LeBron had to put in his 2 cents. LeBron, I think you're just as uneducated on this subject as me. Maybe you know a little bit more, but Daryl Morey definitely knows more than both of us. So I just feel like you should have just said no comment, LeBron. Just if you don't know about it, don't speak on it. You know what I mean? LeBron, that's a rookie mistake. Well, guys, that's all we got for the rookies today. Join us next week or tomorrow, maybe.